Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
This is where the magic happens.
No, where the magic happens is on Paul's Kentucky tour back in 2011, but that's a different story altogether. Welcome to another fun, exciting, sarcastic episode of the podcast with the name Paul. I think in honor of our guest, we're going to call it the She's All Yours cast
But
today.
I don't think Mike knows that story, and we're not about to tell it on this podcast.
No, I don't think
It
so, but
sounds
that's what we're going to
entertaining.
call it
We're
anyway.
gonna It happened in Venice, and you'll hear it when I stop recording this. We're gonna call it the Kentucky Cat.
That'll be behind the scenes, available on the extras in the DVD when we release it.
We're called the Kentucky Cast. How's that?
That'll be good.
Hey, Mike actually
Perfect.
doesn't even know this. Dan is when we stayed in Rome, that like cabin, the like wooden cabin in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
The room that Ryan and I stayed in, like other side of the hall, that was where Dan stayed a year earlier. The
Oh,
exact
nice.
same cabin.
Following in his footsteps.
Exactly. It smelled bad.
Well, maybe I don't know though. Did well, that's another story. Is that gonna be okay? This is definitely going into the recording.
What's that?
This
Oh, yeah.
conversation. This is definitely in the episode.
Yeah, it's
Paul,
already
why
in
don't you
there.
introduce our guest so
Okay, well, let's
people
actually get
stop
into
furrowing their brows at our computer?
it. Michael Shearer joining us from Richmond, Virginia, our basketball insider and a Heat fan. But he's going to put
True.
those feelings aside for all of 15 seconds, and then we're going to get into why the Heat are going to win. Right, Dan?
Well, Paul, you might have to take over for this podcast for me for the rest of it because I got some like a serious case of cramps going on right now in my face. I'm not sure I can continue. I don't know.
Oh man, let's start
Maybe I should
there.
go drink some Gatorade.
Yeah, maybe, or Powerade, or whoever he's sponsored by.
That's
Let's
fair.
start there. Was the criticism LeBron James received fair?
No, I mean, I don't think anybody can realistically say that someone should be out there going through thigh cramps and calf cramps and all sorts of crazy cramps that were happening. Like, it's just a muscle spasm. It's not a thing about toughing it out. It's like you literally can't jump, you know? So I think it's one of those things where like he's always going to be under a microscope. And you get like knee-jerk reactions from both like the detractors who are out there saying that, oh, Kobe would have played through his entire body cramping. Michael Jordan would have played through a coma. And then you've got like his defenders who are out there who immediately just jump on these guys too. So it just gets like very heated very fast. But like I think if you just go to the original story is just the dude was cramping up. Like you're not going to be able to play through that. I'm sorry. So
No.
I think it was a little bit unfair.
Yeah, I think.
That's
Oh, go ahead,
fair.
Dan.
No. Well, I was just going to follow up on that if I could. And I was going to talk to you about. I mean, he had 25 points in 33 minutes. He went 9 for 17 from the field. So he wasn't having, the best game up to that point. I mean, I don't remember what the score was when he went down, but I mean, when he went down, you could see that that pretty much sucked the life out of that Heat team. Do you think that that what that did was that demonstrated that perhaps they rely a little too heavily on LeBron if when he's removed for the game, they sink that badly?
Absolutely, but I actually think that there's a little bit more to it than that.
Okay.
The Heat's defense is like a very high energy defense. Like it's a thing where like they have to close out on the 3-point shooters real fast and real hard. And at the same time, they have to deal with Tony Parker dribbling around through everybody. And there's a lot of like the defense sucking in and sprinting out to the 3-point shooters once the ball gets kicked out. And we were doing it pretty effectively for the most part for the first 3 quarters or so. And then I think that LeBron going out was like a kind of a mental blow for them, but
Yeah.
combined with the Heat, like that's just a very tiring defense to run, especially on a team as old as Miami. And I think that when they're playing in 90-degree weather, I think that had just as big of an impact, to be honest with you.
For
Yeah,
sure.
they just got worn down, I think, by the end.
Yeah, makes sense.
Did you think coming back from last year after Ray Allen's magic three-pointer that were the Heat supposed to win that series? They have inevitably did, or not inevitably, they eventually did.
Yep.
Do you think that was a thorn in the Spurs side all year and it's
Oh, for sure. Like
motivation?
it. I think for the best athletes, they remember the losses a lot more than they remember the wins. And I saw an interview with Tony Parker months and months ago where he said that he thinks that that game six shot is going to be the last thing he remembers before he dies. So these guys take this like, so seriously. Like, they were thinking about it the whole summer. And like, I agree with you what you said earlier. Like, I think the Heat were probably favored to win it last year. I think this year, like, Vegas certainly agrees with me that the Spurs were probably favored. The Spurs have gotten better since last year, whereas the Heat have probably gotten a little bit worse. Mm-hmm. So, I like, we did, the Heat did lose game one last year as well. So, the series certainly, you know, is still very much up in the air. But I felt much better going into the finals last year as a Heat fan than I think I did going into the finals this year.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up Vegas. We didn't even tell Mike that we center this podcast around betting and odds and
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Odds and such.
Miami Heat are 3-1 to win the series, to win the championship. Spurs are 1.4 to win.
Yikes. So
they're heavy favorites. I didn't expect them to be this heavy, but
Mike, I wanted to ask you quickly if I could about the Spurs and specifically about Tim Duncan. And I mean, here's a guy who Paul and I have had this discussion ad nauseum for the last few podcasts, because Tim Duncan in game one, all he does is go 9 for 10 from the field for 21 points, you know, 10 rebounds. He was a beast yet again. When you watch him play, is he one of the best big men, do you think, in basketball history?
Absolutely. I think that it's like, without question, he is the greatest power forward of all time. And he's probably in the top 3 or 4 best big men of all time, in my opinion. The thing is, like, his game has aged so well, because it's more at this point, like, he was never a dominant athlete per se. Like, he's strong, but he's like smart. It's all about positioning, getting like the smart shots. And he's actually helped out because, like, obviously he's been with the same team and with a lot of the same, you know, teammates for a real long time. But the Spurs, like, have a kind of – and Popovich, exactly. So the Spurs have kind of an interesting system where they have they rely a lot on passing big men. So you have, like, Boris Diaw obviously is having a huge impact for them. Thiago Splitter now is having a huge impact with his passing. Like, if you have big men who can make – solid entry passes to Tim Duncan, which they've had so far, like, that's only going to help him, like, continue to perform at a high level over the next couple of years. So I think when you take into account, like, his entire body of work, all the championships, all the MVPs, and more than anything, maybe just the consistency over, you know, his entire 16-17 year career, like, you have to say he's the best power forward of all time.
That's fair. I mean, when you look at guys who are that big, usually they're done after, you know, 10, 12 years. I mean, it's a rarity that you see a guy play at that level for going on 17 years now.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. Who do you have for game two?
So I think it'll be Miami. I think that they, because like I said earlier, like, I think they played very well for the first three quarters. Like, the Spurs were hitting some tough shots, and the game was obviously very close. But I liked the rhythm of the game for us. I think it was, like, pretty up-tempo. We were doing, like I said, a very good job of closing out on the three-point shooters. So I think that LeBron's going to come out. He's going to be motivated. Like, he hears all the negative talk. You know, he hears these things with these people saying, oh, you should have played through, you know, the cramps and that kind of thing. So he's got to be coming out extra motivated, I would say. So I think that for Miami to have a chance in the series, they need to win game two. So that's, I expect them to come out firing on all cylinders.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, LeBron, I mean, in the interviews after the game, I read on ESPN him talking about how he's the quote, easiest target in sports, and how no matter what he does, people are always going to be giving him shit. So,
And that's definitely true, but he brought it on himself a little bit with the decision. You know, that was probably one of the worst, like, social media type, like, because it was just when social media was taken off. That was just one of the worst public relations moves I can remember any athlete making that wasn't, like, a personal scandal, you know, in a long time. So people are always going to hold that against him. And at this point, I think a lot of, like, the casual basketball fans still remember that and look super negatively upon LeBron James for it.
Yeah,
that's fair. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask if he's the most hated athlete in sports. I'm trying to think of anyone else who could.
It's got to be Tiger still. I think Tiger Woods is still
Alex
still
Rodriguez,
real high up there, honestly.
Tiger,
A-Rod.
A-Rod's a good pick for that. Yeah. What do you think LeBron's going to do in the offseason? I mean, I've read there's a lot of talk that, I mean, his two most likely destinations are he stays in Miami, which seems the most logical to me, or he goes back to Cleveland, which I can't picture. I know that they're going to have a good young team with, like, Wiggins and Kyrie Irving and Anthony Bennett and, you know, but well, I mean, look, as a Canadian, I got to try and buff him up a little bit.
We have to sell what we can.
Oh, he's like the worst first overall draft pick since Kwame Brown. Man. He's just brutal.
Yeah, do you think he's going to stay in Miami? Flash towards the end, but yeah. So I think that so him and Bosch and Wade all have 2 years of player options. Like they can pick him up this year, they can pick him up the next year. I feel pretty strongly that as long as the Heat aren't like swept in these finals, that they'll all stay for at least one more year. The exception might be Bosch. I could see Bosch opting out to potentially try to lock up a longer term deal with maybe Miami. But I think LeBron's definitely staying here for one more year, regardless of whether we win or lose this series. It'll be interesting to see what happens in 2 years, because if we lose this year, I don't think anyone can conclusively say, oh, the Heat's championship window is closed or anything like that. If we lose this year and we don't make it to the finals or we lose the next year, that's when I think LeBron has to start thinking about looking at other destinations that can provide him a better chance to win, because losing 2 years in a row with an aging cast is not going to be a good sign for his future, probably. But I feel very confident that he's going to stay at least one more year. I think that there's still, like, win or lose with this finals, I'm convinced that he's going to be here for another season. I just can't see him going back to Cleveland, like you said. Dan Gilbert said some horrendous things about LeBron after LeBron's death. And, like, I know the fans would probably be willing to welcome him back at this point, or at least the smart ones would be willing to welcome him back. But Dan Gilbert was saying all this thing about him being super, you know, narcissistic, like a coward for not, like, bringing Cleveland to the championship, and just saying all sorts of things that LeBron, who's always shown to be, like, reasonably sensitive to what is happening in the media and what people are saying about him, I don't think he's forgotten how poorly he was treated on the way out. Deservedly or not, like, that stuff is going to stick in his mind. I just can't imagine him going back to Cleveland while Gilbert is still the owner.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. One more question from me. What do you think would be more impressive, Tim Duncan's fifth ring or LeBron James's third in a row?
So I think the answer is going to be if he can get a three-peat, that's going to be a little more impressive just because so few teams have ever done it. I think it's like the Lakers, the Bulls, and then the old Celtics, like the Bill Russell era Celtics when they won like eight in a row. The Lakers did it with Kobe and Shaq, obviously. They might have done it even in like the 50s with like George Mikan, I can't remember now, but because there's so few three-peat teams, I think that would probably be slightly more impressive. But let's not discount like five titles in our career, like in very different times too, you know? It's not like they were all in like his prime. Like Duncan would be able to get five rings at five very different points in his career with completely different supporting casts. They're both incredible.
Over, but I think like that three just decades,
Yeah, I think just due to the rarity, though, of the three-peat, like, I think that would probably be the slightly more impressive one. So that's what I'll say.
That's fair. One last question for me, looking towards the draft. I mean, we're pretty hyped up north about Andrew Wiggins, even if Anthony Bennett did shit the bed massively and looks like the next Michael Olowokandi out there in Cleveland. Nice. But do you think the Cavs are going to look towards Wiggins, or do you think they'd be smarter to look at Joel Embiid or a guy like Jabari Parker?
So I think if I were the Cavs, I would be picking Wiggins hands down. I think that he has by far the highest ceiling of anybody in the draft. I think it's one of those things where he came in so overhyped into college, or so hyped up, not overhyped, but so hyped up that like anything less than averaging a 20-10 or a 25-10 would have been seen as a disappointment. But the dude scored 40 points and then 31 points two games in a row. He can put the ball in the basket. He's still very young. There's some things like shooting can be improved like much more easily than trying to make somebody more athletic, which you just can't do. I think he's got a pretty good feel for the game. He's going to become an elite defender no matter what. Like I think that like the ceiling for Wiggins is off the charts. I think that like the floor is still going to be some sort of borderline all-star, like almost like an Andre Iguodala type. I could see that being the floor.
So and that'd be a worthwhile first overall pick.
I think so. Like I think he's just guaranteed to be great. Embiid though is the one that has everybody all pumped up. I suspect that the Cavaliers are going to take Embiid, and I've heard that's who all the top teams want right now. He's just been killing it in interviews. Did awesome in has looked well in his physicals and people checking out his back and everything. So that's the hot commodity. But it'll be interesting to see how. You know, there's so many great players that are coming out in this draft. There's even guys like Marcus Smart, who no one's talking about anymore, who is going to be, I think, fairly successful at the next level. So I think that the Cavs will pick Embiid, but I think they should pick Wiggins. And I'm super excited to see him come into the league.
Right on, so are we. And I got like Tyler Ennis, too, who's another highly ranked Canadian kid who's like a top 10 potential guy. Yeah.
And right, you guys are starting to make some major inroads over here. I have a quick question for you. So how popular like is the NBA over there? I'm not really sure what the pecking order of sports is in Canada, to be honest.
It's number one through five is hockey.
Yep, that's what I would have guessed.
this is the first time we've ever been asked a question on the podcast. I'm smiling up a storm here.
I'm shaking nervously, and I don't know what to do. I would say, well, hockey's got to be first, and then... Yep. NFL when it's on, and then it just
even
depends.
There are no teams,
and then everyone has their team. I mean, if you're in Vancouver and you're on Twitter, your timeline is filled with Seattle Seahawks bandwagon fans.
Gotcha. no Bills fans.
Not from maybe in Toronto, but not in the West Coast. Then basketball, probably third, maybe.
That's not bad.
I think it's a soft between basketball and baseball, and I think it's really contingent on how the Toronto teams are doing. Like the Raps did great this year, and people cared a lot. Like I cared all the way over here in Scotland. I paid attention to the game seven against the Nets, and now that the Blue Jays are doing really well, I mean they're leading the AL East by like seven games. People are caring about that. Like Paul said, my Twitter feed is full of Blue Jays stuff. So it's They are pretty much bandwagon for the other sports, with the exception of hockey. So it's and then people do love watching golf and stuff too. So in terms of team sports, I would probably say NFL, then basketball, then baseball after hockey,
and then curling, and then probably knitting after that.
Then lacrosse, and then professional compliment giving, and professional apologizing,
igloo building, and beaver bacon mashups.
That sounds delicious. I haven't had a beaver bacon mashup all year, bro.
Then you start serving that at Tim Hortons.
Oh, you know Tim Hortons? Oh, God, I miss Tim Hortons.
Oh, God, Dan, you're so Canadian.
I know, eh?
Oh, God, eh?
All right, well, you know what, Michael? This is awesome having you on, man. You're fantastic. You got your basketball knowledge. It certainly trumps us and our very generic discussions about LeBron and Tim Duncan.
I basically just watch PTI and then take all their questions.
He's not definitely a bad strategy. Tony Kornheiser.
I wave my Canadian flag silently.
We're going to bring you back. Sorry, I was just going to say, we're going to bring you back on, Mike, at the end of this for the world-famous buzzer beater set, which actually seems more appropriate since it's a basketball
guy
we got on right now for the buzzer beater.
Yes.
I need to start studying up?
Yes.
Trivia questions.
Let's just say you don't have much time.
And let's also say that if you get a subjective question wrong, you have to call up Tony Kornheiser and tell him that he has to wave a Slovenian flag on the show.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
He should be doing that.
Okay, we'll get you back at the end.
Great.
All right. So we're back here without Mike.
I'm sad now.
I know, me too. That's the first time I talked to him in 3 years.
Good kid.
What was I going to say? Our last podcast, we said that the other Paul Almeida was going to come on, but the audio got all screwed up when we were recording it.
Sorry, folks.
It was a great time. We'll have him back on. He was really good.
Not even if he is from Edmonton, that's not his fault.
Well, we talked Group G with him, but we couldn't release the podcast, so we're going to talk Group G and Group H today, and we're going to talk more. We're going to talk NHL now, and then and then we'll touch French Open. And Dan, you have like half a sentence to talk about the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and I'll take that half sentence. It'll be the best half sentence of the entire podcast.
I highly doubt it. give me. Let's go hockey. Let's do hockey.
Let's do it.
Crickets.
Go ahead. We're going to talk about game one, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I mean, look, the biggest thing that stood out for me about game one, if we're looking back, is, well, okay, two things actually stood out for me about game one. The play of Henrik Lundqvist, which was spectacular, and the clutchness of Justin Williams, who I swear
showed
has a horseshoe stuck up his ass. Yeah, it's not game seven, but still, he's just Captain Clutch. It's unreal. Overtime winner for him. More of a screw up on Dan Girardi's part, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was unfortunate.
Yeah, Williams is right place, right time. But, I mean, this is his 8th goal of the playoffs, his 20th point. Is this a guy who's sneaking his way into the Conn Smythe Trophy? Cause, I mean, because we've been talking Conn Smythe, and we've been talking about Doughty, Kopitar, Jeff Carter, Jonathan Quick. I mean, I think we got to start putting Williams in there, if only for his ability to step up, you know, in the key circumstances.
Yeah, you have to. He has to be in there. I don't know if he's the reason for their success, though. He's the reason for their clutch goals. Yeah, this is a Vancouver-themed podcast, fortunately or unfortunately. We always metaphor back to the Canucks. But yep. In 2011, would Alex Burrows have been the Conn Smythe winner? I don't think he'd do anything in the
Stanley Cup final.
Well, he scored the biggest overtime goal of that playoff for the Canucks, and then he scored another one in game 2 of the finals. So he scored clutch goals, and maybe he didn't do as much as Justin Williams has done overall, but I guess I'm saying consistency is greater than sign than clutch.
that's fair, I guess. I mean, if you're going to make that reference back to the Canucks in 2011, you have to consider Ryan Kesler more clutch and Burrows more consistent. But look,
sure.
I think that you just have to take into account the guy who scores the key goals. I mean, it's more important to me to score these overtime goals, to score these go-ahead or game-tying goals in Game 7 than it is to score the 5-1 goal in Game 5 or something like that, which is, you know, I mean – which was some of the criticism, warranted or not, about what Jeff Carter was doing in the early part of the playoffs. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe it's not right to say that he should be in the Conn Smythe consideration. I mean, considering how well Doughty's been playing and all the hype he's getting now, I'm sure he's clawing his way back in. But I don't know. I feel like I want to have him in there, you know? I mean, it's such a – even though Daryl Sutter friggin' downplays it and says it's not a big deal and it's a team game, all this boring Viking Alberta crap – I think it matters. I really do think it matters. And there is something built into the guy's DNA.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of this goes.
Yeah.
I think it's destined to be someone on the LA Kings. I don't think if New York wins, it'll be Henrik Lundqvist. That's the only debate, is who will it be on the Kings when they inevitably win this series. Bet365 has the series correct score, the top one at LA Kings in 5.
Yeah.
So,
which is, I mean, it makes sense.
At 3.6. LA Kings to win in a sweep is lower odds than any New York Rangers to win at all.
Yeah. So it's I don't want to say it's a foregone conclusion, because that's unfair to the Rangers, but I mean it did look like after those first two periods, well certainly after the first period, the Rangers scored the first two goals, but after that the Kings seemed to wake up and they were the much better team. Was there anyone on the Rangers you think who impressed you from the first game? Someone who you thought you know, really stepped up and had a solid game?
No.
No. Other than Lundqvist.
Other than Lundqvist, but that's normal, unfortunately, for him right now. He's the student who gets all A's, and when he gets one B, it's disappointing. Rather than the C-plus student, when he gets that one A, he's looked on as amazing. So,
yeah,
you know, you have to stay at that level or be better. And in Lundqvist's case, it's hard to be better than top 3 goalie in the league.
I mean, it's all relative with him. A guy I liked, who I thought had an excellent game and has had an excellent playoffs in general, I thought was Carl Hagelin. I mean, he burned the Kings defense on a couple occasions. He is insanely fast, especially on the penalty kill. He looks like a real difference maker for the Rangers up front, but I mean, they just don't have the kind of difference makers that the Kings have. They don't have a Kopitar or a Justin Williams or a Jeff Carter. Their best options are Marty St. Louis, who was quiet that game, or Rick Nash, who is really, I mean, he's got that noose around his neck. He's choking so hard right now in these playoffs, man.
Yeah, he's squeezing the stick just a little too tight.
A little bit too tight. Let's go around the league quickly. Some non-Stanley Cup final related stuff. Just some news, notes, tidbits. Pittsburgh yesterday, they hired Jim Rutherford, former Carolina Hurricanes GM, to be their guy on a short-term kind of transitional deal, which is fine and not a big deal if it were not for the fact that it looked like they were going to hire Pierre Maguire for a while there.
God, it was so... It would have been the best thing ever. Oh,
it would have been. What happened to him as a GM? Come on.
That would have been great. Yeah, it would have been absolutely hysterical. Apparently, the only reason he didn't is because the contract they offered him was not long enough.
He wanted like a long-term secure kind of
contract. Either that or it was the contract length was he either wanted 2 years and they offered him five, or he wanted five and they offered him two. It was one of those permutations, and I can't remember which one. But I'm sad, and as I think a lot of hockey fans are.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Subsequent to that,
yeah,
Dan Bylsma out. He will be out of work for all of a week before he goes to either, what, Florida, Vancouver.
Carolina's an option, too. They're still looking for a coach. I can't remember if anyone else is looking for a coach right now.
Yeah, but he won't be out of work for long. Do you think the Canucks will go for him? Because the conundrum the Canucks face right now is they are looking at John Stephens or Willie Desjardins.
Yeah.
Both of them going deep in the AHL and non-NHL level right now. Well, they are.
Stephens is the assistant, but
Willie, anyways. Yeah. So do they risk not trying to wait on Bylsma? Or do you think they go after Bylsma? And by they, I mean Linden.
I really do think that Linden and Benning have their mindset. I mean, the talk, Gary Mason from the Globe and Mail said that they're looking at Willie Desjardins and John Stephens, and that it's a two-horse race. And Jason Botchford confirmed that. So I really think they've had their heart set on Desjardins. You know what, man? Desjardins was a guy who I looked at last year before they hired Tortorella as being a guy I really wanted them to consider. I really think he's a heart and soul kind of coach. I mean, he's a boisterous guy, but in a better way than Tortorella. You know, he seems like a much more, you know, positive, encouraging guy on the bench from what I've seen from him. And he was a good assistant coach for the Stars for a while. There's also talk that the Canucks were interviewing Mark Crawford, which is that's just bizarre. I mean, look, I'm not gonna say that Crow couldn't be a good coach for a team. I think that put in a right situation, he has shown that he can make a positive impact on young players. So maybe Florida looks at him. But hell, man, if you're gonna bring back Mark Crawford, what are you gonna have like Mike Keenan and Tom Rennie as his assistants? Like, you just can't do that if you're the Canucks.
If you're Mark Crawford and you kind of talk a little like you're still going through puberty and everything.
Oh, everyone gives him shit about that. It's not that bad. It's just when he yells, his voice breaks. That's all. It's just when he gets really upset.
When he gets into it.
Yeah. Is there anything else that I'm missing? Oh, the Dan Boyle thing.
Boyle to the Islanders. Yeah. For a 2015 pick.
Think he'll sign?
No. I don't think he'll sign.
Not like Halak.
Marty Brodeur. Testing free agency.
Yeah, apparently. Good team. He'd be good on the Hawks. Nice guy to mentor Crawford. Not that Crawford needs mentoring. He's like 30.
Anyone needs mentoring from Marty Brodeur, though.
Yeah, I would agree.
French Open. Let's just go through the French Open quickly.
Touch on it, yep.
Djokovic versus Nadal in the finals. I mean, if you bet that from the beginning, there was no point ever where you were going, oh my God, I don't think they're going to meet. It wasn't even close.
Yeah.
Especially when Wawrinka went down early, Federer went down early. Not much else to say. I take Djokovic in this. He has been the favorite from the beginning. He's playing incredibly well. Yeah. I take Djokovic in that. On the women's side, Sharapova just won her French Open title, like everyone predicted, as soon as Lina and Serena Williams went down. Other than those early hiccups, this tournament has gone exactly as everyone thought. It hasn't been the best French Open ever, or the best major ever, but we might hopefully get a magic match between Djokovic and Nadal tomorrow. But other than that, we're looking forward to Wimbledon now. That in the tennis world,
Wimbledon. I mean, as a Canadian, has the story of the French Open been Eugenie, and to a lesser extent, but, you know, Milos and the quarterfinals and Eugenie in the semifinals, or has it been, you know, the fact that it's been a relatively, I guess, I don't want to say boring because that's not fair. There's been some good matches, but not certainly not what you expected.
No, exactly. I think there's stages that sports go through in general where there are different classes. If you think back to Jordan's Bulls, and you think if you're going to NBA, Jordan's Bulls and Kobe's Lakers, and now we're at LeBron versus Durant is the story. And you, there's a time where that's the big story, and then there's a time where there's a transition to new people arriving. And that's what, you know, Nadal, Federer, Djokovic, and Murray were the big four for a long time. It's now transitioning out of that, and new people are going to have to come up and show. And that's what right now is. So there might not be as high a level of matches in tennis. Djokovic versus Nadal still will be, but they are the only two on that top tier now, rather than having four up there. If you're looking at the women's side, Bouchard is pushing up there very fast, and yep. Someone like Lina is trying to stay at the top, and Sharapova is pushing. She's the only the seventh seed, right? So she is pushing hard to be back at the top. So it goes through stages. Right now, we're in the middle of a transition stage into who will be the next superstar tier in tennis.
Yeah, makes sense. Wimbledon will be interesting. I'm hoping that we can see the same kind of thing out of Eugenie and Milos, but we'll see.
Yeah,
it'll be the same favorites going in regardless.
Oh yeah, easily. Well then, okay, Blue Jays, go ahead.
Okay, well look, there's six games ahead right now. And the one thing that everyone has been talking about is their pitching depth, which is fair. I mean, like their pitching depth entering the season, you don't know what you're going to get. Mark Burley is the best pitcher in the majors this year. I mean, there's been a lot of injuries to key guys like Jose Fernandez and stuff, so it's kind of a de facto spot. But still, comes out of nowhere to pitch the way he's pitching right now. I mean, they really like how Happ's pitching. Hutchinson looks like, you know, R.A. Dickey's picking up his pitching, and now they got this Stroman kid, this first-round draft pick from 2011, who's been lights out in his first two starts for them. So, I mean, you know, they got the bats. Their bats are really showing it this year. Solid, solid years for Encarnacion, for Bautista, for Brett Laurie, for Adam Lind, all these guys. I mean, the fairy tale, I thought, honestly, you and me have been talking about this, man. I thought it was a fairy tale when they went on that nine game, win streak. I thought that, you know, that was, they're going to be pipped at the post by a team like the Orioles or the Red Sox. But, you know, they're 14 games ahead of Tampa Bay. They're 10 games ahead of the Red Sox, and then 6.5 and 6 on the Orioles and Yankees. This, like, the gap is real right now. They are building a serious gap, and they look like a legit contender. I mean, they're sweeping the Tigers. Yeah, they're sweeping Oakland, right? Like these are the best teams in the league. And the Jays are taking it to them right now. I mean, if they didn't have such a shitty start to the season, like first 2 or 3 weeks or whatever, where they're sub 500, they'd be the best team in the league right now. And it blows my mind, frankly.
So you say to wait till after the All-Star break, but given the role they're on, Blue Jays at exactly 2-1 to win their division.
Yeah.
Do you think that will go up, go down? Do you think you should take the bet right now?
I have a question for you first. Is there betting on 365 for making the playoffs, or is it just winning the division?
It's just division, division, league, and outright.
Okay, because I do think that the Jays right now, I mean, they're still on a roll. I think that the way they're doing it right now, mathematically, they're coming up on a serious chance now to at least guarantee themselves to be in a solid one of those two wild card positions at the end of the year. They have a pretty serious middle stretch of this month coming up. They have a 4-game set in Baltimore next weekend. Then they have a 3-game set in New York in the middle of the week. And then the week after, they have a 3-game set at home to the Yankees. So check back with me at the end of June with how they're doing. If they still got to, you know, if they've built their gap and it, because they've swept or taken those series, then yes. Right now, I want to see how they do in these key series and see if they can just maintain it till the end of June. Because if they're in this spot or better at the end of June, then mathematically it's hard, barring a New York Mets type collapse, for them not to make it.
Yes. It's interesting that the Bodog doesn't have playoff odds either, but I happen to look at the to win the World Series odds right now. Yeah. On Bet365, the Blue Jays are fourth at 9-1.
Behind who?
Behind the Tigers, Athletics, and third. They're third behind the Tigers and Athletics, tied with the Dodgers and Giants. On Bodog, they are fourth behind the Giants, Athletics, Tigers.
No, that's look. I mean, they have the second largest lead on their division in the league right now, next to the Giants. It's hard for me now to show a lack of confidence in them because they haven't let up. But like I said, I want to see how they do after these two series against the Yankees and this one big series, four game set in Baltimore next week before I make a definitive call on it. As of right now, I still like Baltimore to win that division. I still think they're so strong in everything, but you know, if the Jays take three or four from them, you know, in this series coming up, that's a pretty steep hill for Baltimore to climb.
Yeah. Well, let's go quickly over to, we covered Group G in the podcast that didn't work.
Yes, we did. It was so well covered, too.
In Almeida Palooza. Let's go through it. We have to talk really quickly the entire time like this.
Okay, well,
we're going to do Group G, and we're going to do Group H because we have our big World Cup of Palooza on the 9th. I'm stoked.
Which you people better be tuning in for because we're bringing the goods.
We're bringing it.
Bringing it.
Group G. Well, let's go quickly. Group G is the group of death. The real group
sort of
death.
Yeah, kind of.
Germany, Portugal, USA, Ghana. Germany is the favorites. Portugal is second favorite. Cristiano Ronaldo, leg injury. Discuss.
Well, I mean, look, Portugal, there was so much of their play obviously relies on a guy like Ronaldo. And with a guy like Nani, who's been hurt for most of the year, too, who would normally be an offensive catalyst for them, I really question whether or not they can be taken seriously as like a World Cup contender. In this division, people call it the group of death. I don't think it's as hard as Group D, the England, Italy, Uruguay group. I think that Ghana is a respectable team. I think the Americans are a respectable team. But I do think that this is Germany's group. Portugal, I like Portugal for second because I still think they have a better systems team than the Americans do and than the Ghanaians do. And they're also going to have a bit of a home field advantage because there are a lot of Portuguese people in Brazil, obviously. It really depends on who Portugal is going to bring, though, now to be their key offensive catalyst in the event that Ron can't play. I think Ron's going to play because he's Ron. He'll freaking play.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're going to have to rely on, like, Helder Postiga, who's, like, 90 years old. And, like, you know, João Matinho and Morelles again and Carvalho from Lisbon. These are all guys who we've seen before not really get the job done for the Portuguese.
Yeah, that's their big thing, is that they all individually accomplish a lot, and then they get together and put on the red and green Christmas colors, and they can't show up on the international stage. No. Quickly, how far does Germany get in this tournament?
I have the – even with the Marco Reus injury today, the announcement that he's going to be out of the World Cup, which is – I think that's a blow for them. I still think they're such a deep team. I think this could finally be the year where they break through to the finals. I have them going to the finals and losing, but I do have them going through to the finals. I mean, if you look
over
at the
Brazil.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at the depth on that roster, I mean, even without Marco Reus, you still got Toni Kroos, you got Mario Götze, you got Klose, Müller, and Podolski up front, you got Ozil and Schweinsteiger, and then you got a defense with, you know, Philipp Lahm and Mertesacker if he plays, and Jerome Boateng. So this is a hell of a team. They just haven't been able to get past Spain, really. Spain and Holland have done them in the, or was it Holland or Italy? I can't remember. They just can't seem to get past that semifinal round. I think this year they go to the finals at least. I don't have them winning, but I have them in the finals.
Okay. Losing to Spain or Argentina?
Well, I'm going to save that till Monday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then, last quick question. Yep. Does USA or Ghana qualify?
No, I got Portugal qualifying in second there, and the Ghanaians in third or fourth. If Ghana can take the game to Portugal in their contest, I think that a tie or a win between Ghana, or like a win for Ghana or a tie against Portugal, would put them in the driver's seat against the Portuguese. You know, they have some good players in that Ghanaian team, but I just think that the talent depth, even, and I think Ron's going to play, but I think the talent on that Portuguese team, especially that defense, Portuguese defense is the best part of that team, barring Cristiano. And that's a completely healthy defense. So yeah. I see them as a better team.
And if Portugal comes second in the group, they will play the winner of Group H, which will look like it is going to be Belgium, who is eighth ranked in the world. New FIFA rankings just came out. Eighth ranked. Belgium looks like the overwhelming favorite to win that. Then the rest of it, other than, I mean, not the rest of it. Algeria will come last in the group.
Yeah.
Russia and South Korea. Russia looks like the favorite. This looks like a fairly predictable group. Can South Korea surprise?
You know, the South Koreans, they had that amazing 2002 tournament when they were at home, where they made it all the way to the semifinals, thanks to some, you know, questionable, I guess, refereeing, if I remember correctly.
I think Stefan Ogier refed one of their matches.
That's right, yeah. Against Spain there, that game where they won. You know, I mean, they got some good players, like the kid who plays for Arsenal, Park, up front. Then they got another kid who plays for Bayer Leverkusen in the midfield. I can't remember. That's like Son, I think is his name. Unfortunately, I don't know a hell of a lot about their team. They always seem to play, you know, solid systems. Asian football is a lot about like taking advantage of minimal opportunities and trying to mitigate the damage done by the other teams. Because you look at teams like Japan and South Korea, and they're successful when they're able to really play coherent 11-man full football and then just capitalize on an odd chance or take a game to a shootout. So I think I have the South Koreans at second in the group, ahead of the Russians, because I respect the way they play. I obviously don't have them getting past Germany in the round of 16. But I do like them. I think that they're an intriguing team in that group. I mean, it is definitely between them and Russia for second in that group. And I like the South Koreans a bit more.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's pump up our World Cup segment next time before we head back with Mike for the buzzer beater.
Yes.
What should our plan be? Let's discuss. What should our plan be?
Well, look, I mean, I think that we're gonna go back to the different groups. We're going to go group by group, and the two of us, along with our guests, are going to give picks. We're going to discuss the odds. We're going to give individual top goal scorers for all 32 teams as we're going along. All right.
Oh, okay, hold on. We're going to bet on each group winner or each group qualifiers.
Group qualifiers.
Oh, sorry. I think you're cut.
1-4. We're gonna do the exact positioning.
I think you cut
sorry,
out there.
Can you hear me?
I think you cut out there. Oh, did you say group winners? Go ahead.
Shit. No. At some point.
It's fine. Mine's still
recording. Oh, yours is recording? Okay. Okay, good. As long as yours is recording. Yeah, we're gonna bet on all the way 1-4. We're just gonna give people our breakdown in every group 1-4. Because those are odds. They have odds for, you know, 1-2 top two qualifiers. On all sorts of betting websites. So we'll do that. We'll do individual goal scoring picks for all 32 teams, even if that is hard to do for like Costa Rica and Honduras and shit. We'll make it happen.
Are you going
to
bet on the top team goal scorer from Honduras?
I am going to do my very, very best.
Oh my God. So
I might bet field. I don't know. But we're going to do that. I don't think we're going to go game by game and break it down, but once we have our bracket set, then we'll go through all of the round of 16, quarterfinal, semifinal, and final matchups that we have. So it'll be, you know, folks, it'll be pretty heavily betting centric, but we will have a bit of fun with it. We'll have a bit of fantasy with it, where we talk about our complete brackets, because really, man, it's the most fun tournament to discuss.
It's the best. And everything they have on here is great. I mean, we can put our brackets out and put money on everything. They have to reach quarterfinal odds, to reach semifinal odds, to reach the final odds, stage of elimination, finalists. Who are the finalists right now? The top?
Like the odds?
Yeah. Top odds.
Brazil and Spain, I would imagine.
What we got here? Let's see. Brazil is probably the top in all of them.
Yeah,
Brazil and Spain at 13-1, top one.
Yeah, makes sense. What's the bottom one? Like Costa Rica, Honduras or something? Because there's so many permutations.
There's so many. It goes through, it doesn't go in order. So it just goes by team name. So if you look at
Honduras. Honduras isn't even on here.
Okay, well, that doesn't matter. They're not hedging their bets with that.
No.
No. But you know what? It'll be fun. We'll have guests on. We'll talk about all the break. We'll talk about stuff like golden ball odds, too. I think Paul is still betting on Gianluigi Buffon.
Yep.
Golden ball. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's still going for that. Highest scoring team, lowest scoring team, stuff like that. We'll do all the shit. It'll be epic. An amazingly fun, epic episode. So please tune in. If you've reached this point in the podcast, you're probably going to tune in because you're one of our like four or five regular listeners.
Started from the bottom, now we're here.
Buddy, we got our lint rollers. But please tune in. We're going to have fun and it's going to be worth your time. And you know what? Even if they don't tune in, Paul, we'll still have a hell of a conversation like we usually do.
Yes, sir. All right. Let's bring Mike back in and let's not tell him what happened in Venice.
No, because really that's just between you and the hotel room. Oh, God. I hope your mom's not listening to this one.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I just broke the bed. That's all I did.
Oh, God.
Mike, you there?
Okay, so we're back for the buzzer beater with Michael Shearer out of Kentucky, Europe.
Out of Kentucky. That sounds like a college. Like he's going to be drafted. All right, with the second overall pick, DP Sports Podcast takes Michael Shearer from Kentucky.
I'll take it.
Oh, God.
Are you ready, Dan?
I'm ready, bro. I am locked and loaded.
Okay, hit it. Go first.
All right. First question, my friend. We didn't get a prediction from you. Give me a prediction for this series.
I'll say Spurs in seven.
Whoa.
Objectively speaking. The homer in me is saying Heat in five. But
and it would have been four.
My first question, is LeBron a better player than Kobe Bryant?
So, point in time, obviously, yes. I think for the career, that question still remains to be seen. If LeBron retired tomorrow, you'd have to give it to Kobe. But I think just projecting on towards the future on what he's done so far, I think LeBron will pass him.
Okay. All right, now next question. We all know the big three on both teams, but give me one player from either team who you're looking at who you think can make a huge difference in this series.
That's a great question. I think it's got to be Boris Diaw. If he plays like he did last night, where he was cutting through the Heat, making ridiculous wraparound passes to Tim Duncan for dunks, if he's able to do those kind of things, it really gives us problems because that means they're going to have four people who can handle the ball out there with Boris Diaw, and then Ginobili, Parker, and some combination of Danny Green or Marco Bellinelli. So if we need to figure out some way to cool off Boris Diaw and keep him from being this like kind of a almost like a point power forward. So that's the guy we need to watch.
Good.
Cool. Is the discrepancy between the top teams and the bottom teams in the NBA too big?
It's a good question. I would say no. I think that like you look at someone like Phoenix, for example, who was projected to be an atrocious team this year and was able to come out, and they were fighting for a playoff spot till the very last day. And that was a team that nobody wanted to face in the playoffs. Real young, high energetic team that would have just run you ragged. So I think that like the league is at a decent spot right now. They're never going to contract with teams selling for $2 billion, obviously. So that's not really going to ever happen in the foreseeable future, I don't think. But I think it's in a good spot. Like at any given day, like you'll have bad teams that can beat the best teams. It's just that I think basketball is one of those sports that because there's so few players on the court at any one time compared to some other team sports, just having the best dude will give you the chance in like a 7-game series. But in any one game, in any random regular season game, it really comes down to who's, you know, which team is shooting better, who's got the hot hand, that kind of thing.
Good answer. Bit of a random question, but if you were building a team right now and you were given the option of one of the following three players, who would you take? If you were given the option of Kyrie Irving, Joel Embiid, or Michael Carter-Williams?
That is a good question. I'm going to say Embiid. I think Carter-Williams is going to be a nice player. I don't think that he is going to be someone you can build your team around. Okay. I actually do think you can build a team around Kyrie if you have the right pieces, but point guard is also the deepest position in the league. I think that like if you start off with a potential franchise center here in Embiid, and this is assuming, I'm assuming for this purposes that he's 100% healthy, which might be not a great assumption, but if he's healthy, I think that he has the potential to be a game changer at the center position, which is the shallowest position in the league. So I think just because there are a lot of very, very solid point guards out there that you could hopefully try and pick up, I think you have to go with Embiid here.
Right on.
Do you realize that me and you and probably Kyle Manning are the only people cheering for the Heat in all of North America?
Cutting out, Paul.
Oh, am I cutting out? Hello?
Or am I cutting? I'm sorry. I'm going to ask that question again. You cut out.
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
There we go.
Try it again. Yeah.
Do you realize that me, you, and Kyle Manning are probably the only three people in North America cheering for the Heat?
Oh, yeah. And I feel good about it, honestly. I only own two Miami Heat jerseys, and they're both Udonis Haslam ones. So I rock those things with pride and everywhere I go on game days.
There you go.
Yeah, good about it.
All right. As a Heat fan, who is the single worst player you've ever seen play for the Heat?
Oh, my God. This is so easy. Antoine Walker. Not because he's the worst. He's not the worst player by any means, but the things he would do on the court just made me want to reach to the screen and punch him in his fat face. He tried his best to lose those finals against the Mavericks. He just took some unforgivable shots, played just horrendous defense at all times. For someone who had a lot of talent, like, you look at Paul Pierce, for example, his teammate for a long time. Paul Pierce maximized every ounce of talent he ever had. Antoine Walker, I feel like, did the exact opposite. Just squandered it, tried to shoot as many, four-pointers as he could. Absolutely Antoine Walker.
But I just remember how he, I read an article on ESPN, how he like lost his entire $150 million, whatever he made during his career, just buying stupid shit.
Oh, yeah, he's broke. Yeah, apparently, he's actually real big gambling buddies with Michael Jordan. So they used to go out and they used to just throw like stacks around like no one's business. But Michael Jordan has slightly deeper pockets than Anthony.
Yeah, I would imagine he's still making money.
That's ridiculous. Michael Jordan's like, oh, I lost $5 playing roulette. No big deal. Antoine Walker's like, oh, no, that was my life inheritance.
I'm done. That was my endorsement money.
Twinkie endorsements.
What are we at? Is this my fourth question?
This is your last question.
This is my last question? Okay. If you had to choose between a fully paid-for Kentucky trip or a third Miami Heat championship, which would you take? Well, third in a row.
I did have a lot of fun on that Kentucky trip. But you know what? I'll take the Kentucky trip anyway because I think the Heat can win a third championship anyway. So, All right. I'm gonna take that trip.
Attaboy.
I need a vacation.
Smart, but you can't go with Paul and Ryan again. That's the thing. I got to get in on this. These stories that I've heard, man, mine sounds like pedestrian in comparison. All right, my last question then. You're a Virginia boy. Who's the best athlete to ever come out of the state of Virginia?
So I think Allen Iverson actually used to live here, was born here in like the Virginia Beach area, if I remember. So that's who I'm going to go with.
Okay. Not Michael Vick?
No, not Michael Vick.
No.
No bad news pedals?
No. No Michael Vick.
Fair enough. All right, cool. All right, man, well, that was awesome. You were fantastic. Thank you for coming on again. You have nothing to plug, so I'm just going to allow you to just sign off with some words of wisdom for the listeners. Basketball, Paul Almeida insider information, whatever you got.
I get the only thing I really care about is that people should stop hating on poor LeBron so much. I think the man takes way too much abuse. So look past that, the decision, which for the record raised $2 million for the Boys and Girls Club of America.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Just start rooting for Miami.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go.
Smart man.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mike. We'll have you back on before the series is over.
All right. Yeah, awesome. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks.
No problem.
See ya.
Bye.
All right. So we'd like to thank Mike. We want to apologize to Paul Almeida, not myself, but for the audio not working out. We'll hopefully get him back on sometime. He was very, very knowledgeable about the NHL and World Cup and sports in general, as you expect from a TSN radio.
And folks, still go follow him on Twitter. It's Azorcan Global, AZORCAN Global. I mean, he does some fantastic sports tours that Paul and I were seriously considering doing. I mean, Finland for the World Juniors in 2016. That's pretty dope.
Yeah. So we'll get him on to describe all that again.
Yeah.
And we'll talk more sports. That's the good thing, is that there's always things to talk about. So
definitely.
But for now, we'd like to thank Mike, and we'll get him back on before the finals are over, because that was great.
And
thanks, Mike. Good Virginia boy.
Good Virginia boy. And we'll go on a... I'm looking up Kentucky tours as we speak.
Good plan. And remember, folks, like Bob Barker said, never spay or neuter your pets because the world really needs more puppies.
Yeah, yeah. I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah. And Monday, June 9th, preview show. Follow me on Twitter. I forgot to mention that. Follow me on Twitter.
KentuckyCast, dpsportscast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Paul Almeida, Dan McDonald. We should really do this at the beginning.
We suck at like introducing our show. Like if someone actually cared enough to listen to it, they wouldn't know what they were listening to.
Yeah, so we should probably get on that, hey?
We are going to get on that.
This is what's going to happen. I'm going to put so much work in. You're going to put so much work in. We're going to get down. And on Monday, we're going to come back with a theme song.
Yeah, I think so. I think we have like the Super Mario theme with like your voiced over. See ya.
See ya.
Yeah, we'll do that. But in the meantime, folks, follow Paul at PaulAlmeida22 on Twitter. Follow me at DanTheMax, DanTheMacs. You know, you're not going to follow me because no one's actually followed me since I've started asking. It's been a largely fruitless enterprise. But
he's not mad at all. Don't worry about
it. You know, if you want, if you're bored and the follow button looks particularly tempting, give it a try. Right?
Just begging people now? Oh, man.
I'm good. I'm good. Look, I'm good at Twitter. I'm a fun follow. My mom tells me all the time.
Okay. Until then, let's get you more Twitter followers by Monday.
Let's do it.
I'm stoked for Monday. Okay. See you later.
Hashtag see ya.